For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson. With the latest readout video from our free Wednesday Wake Up email newsletter, subscribe, support, blah, blah, blah. And also, greetings to viewers in South Africa, who've made it number 8 on our all-time list of views by jurisdiction. And I say it in English, partly because that's one of the 12 official languages, and also because many of the others use exclamation marks as letters, so I might hurt myself. Then, risking further pain, I concede that we were wrong. At the Climate Discussion Nexus, we often complain that the media treat hot weather events as proof of climate change, while cold weather events, they say, are just weather. But recently, to our surprise, the Weather Network managed to report that a, quote, 50 degrees Celsius heat dome shatters records across Australia, end quote, without once mentioning climate change, while here in frozen North America, the endless snow and cold, we are now told, is, drumroll please, proof of climate change. Thus, Inside Climate News haulers quote, a winter storm fueled by global warming tests U.S. disaster response, end quote. And if you're wondering how, well, quote, climate change is making disasters more intense and unpredictable, end quote. Right. Whereas they were definitely both mild and predictable in the past. Everyone says so. Or at least, everyone they know assumes so. And then, cue the arm-waving by the scientists who say. And there it is. Quote, in fact, scientists say, global warming has reshaped the atmospheric engine in ways that can make winter storms and extreme cold outbreaks more disruptive than ever, end quote. Polar vortex, atmospheric moisture, blah, blah, blah. All from a completely unbiased expert at the Woodwell Climate Research Center in Falmouth, Massachusetts, which says of itself, quote, we partner with leaders and communities for just meaningful impact to address the climate crisis, end quote. Not to mention partnering with the press. In the newsletter, we cite many more examples, which you can go and look at. But here in this video, we'll just cut to Chris Martz pointing out with justified irritation, quote, first, scientists never predicted both more extreme heat and cold decades ago. Only more frequent and intense heat waves were predicted, end quote. Moreover, he says, in the United States, quote, both extreme heat and cold have decreased since the early 20th century. The extreme heat during the 1930s and 1950s masked any recent increase, while the number of cold waves fell off a cliff after December 1989, end quote. And, since the weather is not getting more unusual, people who claim that it is, while making a big hoo-ha about being the rational, evidence-based ones, shouldn't be so cavalier about evidence. Or logic. Because here's an equation for you. Cold weather that alarmists failed to predict, plus an energy system they did wreck, equals misery and danger. Who says math isn't fun? That'd be people living with the ensuing nightmare, and possibly the activists scrambling to disconnect those variables lest it cause talk. Or telling us to disconnect the heater. The New York Times Climate Forward has the brilliant thought that if the politicians and zealots have made the grid unable to keep you warm in a storm, you should chill instead and get paid for it. But there really is no denying, first, that this storm underlines how vulnerable we are to weather if the power isn't reliable, and second, that winter ain't dead yet. And actually here, the good news is, some of the usual suspects aren't denying it. As Philip K. Dick rightly said, quote, reality is that which, when you stop believing in it, it doesn't go away, end quote. Including that cold is more dangerous than heat globally to humans, a tropical species. As, for instance, in this story from ABC News, quote, about 4,000 buildings in Kiev remained without heating Wednesday, and nearly 60% of the Ukrainian capital was without power, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said, after days of Russian bombardment of Ukraine's power grid. With temperatures falling as low as minus 20 Celsius, minus 4 Fahrenheit, in Kiev, Ukraine is seeing one of the coldest winters in years, deepening the hardship of Ukrainians almost 4 years after Russia launched a full-scale invasion, end quote. And you'll notice that the Russians don't make their most pointed attacks on Ukraine's grid during the summer to shut down the AC. They wait for winter. And now, a word from our sponsor, which as always is you, including all the folks who've been hitting the thanks button on YouTube. We really appreciate it, but we're up against a big challenge. We're up against well-funded opponents. So please, if you haven't already given, the quickest way is here. Help us make our budget for the first half of the year, for the year as a whole, so we can keep bringing you these videos. Now we go back to me. And reality also includes the fact that, despite what we were told, cold winters are not something relegated to history books about, oh, say, Napoleon's invasion of Russia. We're having one now. And when the cold weather invades, the grid can be in trouble in winter, even in the United States, which is fabulously wealthy by historical standards. Media fearlessly blamed Trump for cold putting lives at risk. But what about all those blue state politicians that bet their citizens' furnace on wind and solar and are now experiencing blue fingers, toes, and noses? How odd. Not a word do they say. Meanwhile, Chris Martz also observes that Washington, D.C. went 6 consecutive days with highs below freezing by January 29th, tying a record from 2004, and, at the time of his writing it, would almost certainly hit 7 and tie the record from 1989. He also said that if it reached 12 days, it would tie the record set in 1936 and also 1895. And when we say record, we mean since such measurements began back in 1872. Media outlets and alarmists don't seem to be observing that it's not much to show for 150 years of relentless heating due to man-made CO2. But let it tie a heat record somewhere, and you know what they'll blare. Then, from the coincidences that could make you paranoid file, we were emailing ourselves a news item about Toronto, Canada's largest city, having its snowiest day ever on January 26th, and thinking, as usual, that ever is a word used too casually by the press, because in this case, comparable records only date to 1937. And as we were writing it, the auto cucumber feature tried to change snowiest to snowmelt. Okay, they're not plotting. But we really are having a winter to remember, despite global heating breakdown thingy, exactly as the alarmists did not predict and now don't want to deal with, along, it seems, with the technology. Oh, and the San Bernardino Sun tells us to, quote, blame the weather for Southern California homes being 122% costlier than U.S., end quote. Oh, great, we thought. Here we go again. Wildfires, hurricanes, insurance crisis, But no. It turns out the point of the article was that not having crippling snowstorms raises property values. How strange. Oh, and speaking of California and of the San Bernardino Sun, remember all those droughts and wildfires that were supposedly rendering the Golden State uninhabitable and it was all your fault? Well, the same Sun also tells us, quote, wildflower superbloom is a real possibility in Southern California this year, experts say. A few more winter rainfalls and the region could be ripe for an epic wildflower season, especially if it can avoid an early heatwave, caterpillar damage, and invasive Sahara mustard, end quote. Which brings up two thoughts. One being that that business about if it's not too hot, too cold, if the pests don't show up, if there aren't weeds and so forth, is the kind of thing farmers have been complaining about since the invention of the plow, despite the alarmists' bucolic vision of what weather and farming were like before the dreaded CO2 came and killed everything nice. And the second point is, this wildflower bloom suggests that it hasn't killed everything nice. And another thing. The Economist Today newsletter for January 28 whined, quote, Donald Trump, Xi Jinping, Vladimir Putin, and Vladimir Zelensky don't agree on much, but they all affirm that Europe is weak and annoying. The Telegram, our column on geopolitics, explains why it's fashionable to pick on Europe and why the insults say as much about the leaders lobbing them as about the real-life place, end quote. Oh, I know you are, but what am I? But frankly, economist dudes and dudettes, a civilization that's fixated on failed energy policies and deindustrialization, and whose chattering classes are turning it into a geopolitical comedy sideshow, partly because they think it's still 1878 out there, with Dickens and Balzac dominating culture, Britannia ruling the waves, and France able to settle uppity foreigners by sending a gunboat, is an irresistible target for justified mockery. Oh, and then, speaking of winter, we got an email from one of our energy providers, brrr, it's cold outside, and then it said, quote, stay warm, stay safe, end quote, and showed a multicultural mum bundling a child. And then it asked, quote, ready if the power goes out? Winter storms, heavy ice accumulation, and high winds can wreak havoc on your city's power grid. Being ready with backup power solutions and emergency kits can help you comfortably weather the storm, end quote. Ah, so you admit that cold is bad, even dangerous, and you want us to get a gas-powered generator? No, not the latter. Instead, it offered to rent us, quote, reliable backup power with a battery storage system, end quote, or BESS to those in the know. And yes, on this point, we might one day have something good to say about the green energy transition if it ever started working, including reliable scale BESS. But meanwhile, we're going to heckle people who pretend otherwise. And we won't be alone. Bjorn Lomborg writes, quote, "Across the world, politicians are facing up to the high costs and tiny climate returns of raising energy prices. Voter backlash against soaring energy bills is forcing a rethink of aggressive net zero mandates across the UK, Europe, the US, and beyond," end quote. And yes, we note that even the government of Quebec, which is Canada's most reliably progressive province, though BC gives it a run for its money, is apparently winning the war on climate change by retreating strategically. Reculer pour mieux sauter, one might say. And because they're politicians, they're doing it evasively. Evidently, they're delaying their targets to protect their voter base, but, quote, in a balanced and responsible manner, end quote, depending which way the mental wind is blowing their tongues around. In the newsletter, we then continue our deep dive, yes, it's very deep, into last summer's U.S. Department of Energy Red Team Contrarian Climate Report by looking at the last half of Chapter 5, which covers three more topics where the dang observations just won't line up with those lovely models. For instance, stratospheric cooling. We actually did a summer 2024 series on the work of University of Waterloo scientist Qinbing Liu, who's argued that climate change is actually better explained by changing levels of halogenated GHGs, or HGHGs, those are the gases implicated in the thinning ozone layer, than by increases in CO2. As he pointed out, the CO2 model, paradoxically, but it does, says the stratosphere, which had been cooling for several decades up to 2000, would keep cooling as CO2 levels went up and so did planetary temperature. But, he said, if it's actually HGHGs that are responsible, then the stratosphere should have started warming after 2000 because those gases were essentially eliminated under the Montreal Protocol and, as that protocol had aimed to bring about, stratospheric ozone is rising. Well, that's what actually happened, and even the IPCC acknowledges it, though not drawing the obvious lessons. The DOE Red Team then took a look at average Northern Hemisphere snow cover. And again, it'll be no surprise for CDN viewers to learn that it's been rising since the 1960s. But, as the Red Team reported, climate models predicted that it would decrease. Then they turned to a rather niche measure, or perhaps more niche measure, the, quote, hemispheric symmetry of the planetary albedo, end quote, which might sound like misheard lyrics from a Jimi Hendrix song, but it's actually the puzzling difference in reflectivity of the Earth's surface between the northern and southern hemispheres. Albedo is the fraction of incoming solar radiation that's reflected directly back into space. And variations of as little as 0.01% up or down in albedo should result in larger climate forcing than all the GHGs in history, because solar energy is basically what warms the planet. And yes, that means natural variations matter. But so does satellite data showing that, on average, the northern and southern hemispheres have had about the same albedo over the past 50 years. And the reason that's odd is that the models say that the northern hemisphere, which has both more land and more cloud cover, should, in consequence, be more reflective. And then finally, the Red Team presents some data on the U.S. Corn Belt, showing that, yes, once again, the models were hysterical about agriculture being doomed, and that they predicted too much warming, and that they did it on purpose. Now we say, grin and polar bear it. Because these cute fuzzy white critters, so beloved by the alarmists, as long as they don't have to live near any of them, are supposedly disappearing due to climate change. But once again, that pesky data. It shows that their numbers are stable or increasing across the Arctic. And it gets even worse for those who want a gaunt, stuffed polar bear head for the green cause. The bears are having the gall to get healthier, even where warming is happening faster than average. As Vox puts it, quote, "Something very unexpected is happening to Norway's polar bears," end quote. And we say, well, unexpected to you, maybe. Finally, from the co2science.org archive, Golden Club sounds like a James Bond film. Golden Club. But actually, Aquaticum L, Aguantium Aquaticum L, isn't British. It's an American plant that grows in ponds, streams, and shallow lakes, and has the unsexy alias Neverwet because its surface apparently repels moisture. but we digress. The point is, in 1997 and 2005, 12 experiments showed that an extra 300 parts per million of atmospheric CO2 caused Golden Club to grow an average of 19.8% more. The plant with the carbon touch. For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, and I know climate from weather.